Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo coming to you live from Bonn, Germany. In the next 25 minutes, South Africa's opposition party, the Economic Freedom Fighters, files criminal complaint against the wealthy Gupta family.
The Guptas will be brought down to their knees and they're going to be brought down together with their handler, Jacob Zuma.
And in an exclusive interview with DW, South Sudan's rebel leader Riek Machar blames the international community for the failure of the peace process.
The international community has not seriously assisted us to ensure that this peace agreement is implemented.
Plus, an African superheroes. Really? Aren't they all Americans? The Batman, the Superman, the Spider-Man? Well, we meet a creative artist in Nigeria who thinks it's about time for an African Guardian. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
South Africa's finance minister, Pravin Gordhan, has revealed in a court affidavit that the Gupta family and their associated companies were involved in a suspicious transaction worth 6.8 billion rand, that's $480 million, over the last 4 years. The three brothers, Ajay, Atul and Rajesh Gupta, and President Zuma, are the subject of an official probe into allegations that the family held undue influence over the president. Gordhan, meanwhile, is facing a fraud trial which the opposition says is politically motivated. The opposition Economic Freedom Fighters Party has also filed criminal complaints against the Guptas and against President Zuma's son, Dudu Zane, alleging racketeering, money laundering, corruption, fraud and theft. Subri Govinda has the details.
The charges laid against President Jacob Zuma's benefactors, the Gupta family and his son Dudu Zane, come hot on the heels of open support for Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan by Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, a number of his cabinet colleagues, former struggle stalwarts and activists, and at least 15 top business people in the country. The fiercely vocal Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF, has not only laid charges against the Gupta brothers and Dudu Zane Zuma, but also against one of Zuma's cabinet ministers, Mosibenzi Zwane, who is the Minister of Mineral Resources. The EFF deputy leader, Floyd Shivambu, attributed South Africa's current problems to Zuma's dealings with the Gupta family.
The Guptas will be brought down to their knees and they're going to be brought down together with their handler, Jacob Zuma. Yeah. Because all these problems that we're confronted with here in South Africa is because of the relationship between Jacob Zuma and the Gupta family. Of course, they've got their son there, Dudu Zane. Dudu Zane is nothing but a proxy of Jacob Zuma.
Similarly, the Democratic Alliance wants the police to speed up their investigations under the Prevention and Combating of Corruption Activities Act. The DA has also called on the new public protector, Busisiwe Makwebani, to release the state capture report compiled by her immediate predecessor, Tuli Madunsela. The leader of the DA, Musi Maimani, said the NPA was adopting double standards on Zuma and Gordhan.
The contemplative delay tactics being used by the NPA and ultimately the fact that it is selective prosecution in that they failed to charge Jacob Zuma for the 783 charges of fraud, corruption, money laundering and racketeering. It is in this regard that as a party we want to put our position to become an intervening party in the matter to be heard in the North Gauteng High Court. We will argue strongly that the report must be released as a matter of urgency and that it must be made public.
Many leaders within the ruling ANC itself, political and social forces, have intensified their call for the president to step down. But the leader of the ANC Youth League, Colin Maynor, said they would stand by the president.
We will take it forward all over the country. We must rise and indicate to the enemy that we are more than ready. I'm a comrade on controversy. Your guns that protect, bring them now. Now is the time to defend the revolution. Those guns that are somewhere, we must do it.
The Congress of the People Party, COPE, has laid a charge against Maynor for his comments. The ruling ANC, through its spokesperson, Zizi Kodwa, has also condemned Maynor's call to war.
As long as there are individuals who continue to make such regular statements, we have the responsibility as a leader of society, the ANC, not just to give leadership and provide leadership to society, but to also to call on our members to refrain from making this inflammatory statement.
The current political instability has been worsened by Zuma being out of the country for the past 2 weeks. Last week, he was in Kenya when Minister Gordon was charged, and now he is in India attending a summit of the BRICS countries made up of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. When Zuma returns within the next day or two, it seems he will have a lot to contend with, including a rebellion from within his own ruling ANC and people within the party's alliance partners in the Communist Party and the trade union movement.
Subri Governor reporting. So is this essentially a battle for political survival between President Jacob Zuma and his finance minister, Pravin Gordhan? My colleague Mark Caldwell put that question to independent political analyst Ralph Matega.
Indeed, it's the contest for dominating the political space in South Africa. And both parties are actually using their position, which by implication means that they are also using state institutions to fight back on this battle for domination within South African polity. The decision by Gordhan to actually approach the court on his own regarding the suspicious transactions involving the Gupta family lifts the lead on one of the issues that has been the subject of conspiracy theories regarding why did the banks in South Africa, the four major banks, decide to stop banking with the Gupta family. So because there is pressure within cabinet to actually force the banks to do business with the Guptas, we have seen Pravin Gordhan going outside the party, approaching the court and asking the court to issue an order which says cabinet or any finance minister should not intervene in this tussle between the Guptas and the banks. You can say at this point that the game plan seems to favor Pravin Gordhan, because now the issue involves the court, which has been very independent, and quite often the court has been quite scathing on some of the decisions taken by Mr. Zuma.
The opposition has filed criminal complaints against the Guptas. What sort of political impact are those complaints likely to have?
The opposition has also been weighty about this because they are aware that any investigation into the Gupta dealings that will involve government should be done by an independent body. So by petitioning the court to look into those issues on the suspicion that there are elements of criminality within what has happened, this is a strategy by the opposition to involve the independent court. They know that they can trust the decision of the court, and they know that once the issue involves investigation and involves the court, it might actually take a direction that allows the opposition to extract political mileage.
The opposition says the fraud charges against Gordhan are politically motivated. Is that a view which is widely shared in South Africa?
It is the view that is not only shared among the opposition parties, but civil society organizations as well. Some of the retired judges with clear knowledge of the law and of the legal system in South Africa have also joined in on this, criticizing the National Prosecuting Authority for its decision to charge Pravin Gordhan. So there is an overwhelming support for Gordhan outside the ANC and outside government fire.
Now, what about reaction to these latest developments within the ANC? Does the party membership still back Zuma?
I think that because of the growing concern that Zuma seems to be dragging the name of the ANC through disrepute, there has been a trickling of members of the ANC from within the party beginning to speak. And I have to say that those members of the ANC are speaking because they are realizing that the space is opening up outside the ANC for people to engage with Zuma's leadership. And they are taking advantage of that and speaking because within the ANC, the space for critical evaluation of Zuma's leadership and his relationship with the Gupta seems to have not been there.
Independent political analyst Ralph Matega. And in other news, the Constitutional Court of the Democratic Republic of Congo has approved a request by the Electoral Commission to postpone the November election. This controversial move means President Joseph Kabila could stay in office until 2018. You are listening to Africa Link on DW in Bonn, Germany.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
In South Sudan, at least 56 rebels and 4 government troops were killed in heavy weekend clashes in the northeast of the country, according to Brigadier General Lul Ruai Quang, a spokesperson for the SPLA government forces. Rebel leader Riek Machar confirmed that there had been heavy fighting around, but not inside the town of Malakal. He said the rebels had had casualties, the government, serious casualties. Machar was speaking to DW's Isaac Mugabe, who asked him if he accepted partial responsibility for the failure of the peace process for which he and President Salva Kiir had been blamed.
This is not our making. It is because President Kiir does not want the peace agreement. He does not want to implement it. He clearly stated that he had reservations even the day he signed the agreement on the 26th of August 2015.
But the president said that you came armed with a pistol against the usual protocol for the meeting at the presidential palace, which seems to be a sign of mistrust between both of you. What do you have to say about this?
It's a complete lie. I left handling guns since 1991 when I left being a field commander. And it would be very absurd for me to go to a meeting with a pistol, particularly going to a meeting with a president.
Okay, Dr. Machar, your movement, the SPLM-IO, claims or says that the international community's failure to enforce the 2015 agreement was a major reason for renewed hostilities.
Well, in a way it is true. The international community has not seriously assisted us to ensure that this peace agreement is implemented. You know, there are a lot of faults that have happened. Even after the July 9th, the international community did not condemn it. When it is an incident that should be investigated internationally, it should be investigated because fighting in a Republican palace, this is the first time it happened. How do you implement the peace agreement when a major party like President Kiir's party plots to kill its first vice president? Now the peace agreement has collapsed. The transitional government of national unity has collapsed. The international community is not keen to look for a solution.
How are you going to revive it for the sake of peace in South Sudan?
I want to state clearly we are committed to the peace agreement. We signed it in front of the international community in Addis. We went to Juba to implement the agreement. We got attacked in Juba. We were pushed out by sheer force of arms when we went to implement the agreement. We are calling on the international community, the AU, the IGAD, who were grantors of this peace agreement, to think seriously of how it can be resuscitated.
Would you work with President Salva Kiir again, given the opportunity in the nearest future, especially that there are some reports that suggest that you've been banned from engaging in politics in South Sudan?
There is nobody who can ban me in engaging in politics in South Sudan. Those who made such a statement were deluding themselves. They know that if there is going to be peace, the SPLM, SPLIO must be involved. There is no alternative.
What would you tell President Salva Kiir and the people of South Sudan who might be listening to this program from the bottom of your heart at this moment?
We are committed to the peace agreement and to its implementation. However, the events of July 8th made the peace agreement to collapse and the transitional government of national unity to collapse. We want to bring the war to an end as soon as possible. Our problem is that there is no political process that a dialogue can ensue in. So we are left with no choice except to continue waging a popular armed resistance against this dictatorship.
South Sudan's rebel leader Riek Machar talking to DW's Isaac Mugabe. And still to come on the program, 21 schoolgirls freed by the Nigerian Islamist group Boko Haram are reunited with their families. But first, we meet the creator of African superheroes in Nigeria.
Africa on the move.
Africa on the move this week takes us to the virtual world of superheroes. Now, if you think about superheroes, most of them seem to be Americans. But why aren't there any African superheroes in the comic sections of local bookstores? The creator of the Nigerian company Comic Republic have been mulling over this question too, as we hear in this report written by Johannes Meyer and read now by Stomae George.
If Batman's Gotham City was in Africa, then it would probably be in Lagos. That's at least what the artist from Nigeria's Comic Republic thought. Over 13 million people live here, and a superhero like Batman would have a chance to chase after enough bad guys. Gide Martin is the CEO of the Comic Republic and a comic nerd.
I think it was about 5 years old. My mom would buy me comic books, and I would trace every single one of them and completely ruin the comics. You know, that's basically how I learned. I would put a piece of paper under the comic, and I would put my pencil over it, and I would draw over it so that it would imprint the back of the comic. I didn't really go to any school. I just basically traced comics.
Gide Martin and his team have created their own world of Nigerian comic heroes. The powerful Guardian Prime, who has godlike powers, the female hero Avonome, who with her gleaming eyes can see spirit, and Aye, a young girl who has the power to save the past, present, and the future.
Why we need stories about African superheroes is because, for example, when I was growing up, you know, I remember that when I needed to make a decision, I would think about what would superheroes do. When you see somebody that is the same skin tone as you, comes from the same place that you're from, can relate with the same problems that you have, it's easy for you to believe that if he can do it, I can do it.
To know a way that people can actually relate to it, Gide and his crew take their fresh off-press gloss comic out onto the street.
This is the first of a series of our printed issues. This is our test, our forerunner, so that people can see what the comics and have a feel of what it will be like at first before we start releasing all the issues altogether.
And it seems a local superhero is what is urgently needed. Many of the Comic Republic's subjects come from day-to-day life in Lagos, and the mix of Yoruba mythology and fast urban life give it its unique spin. The kids love them, and even older residents like Wahid are fascinated by the idea.
If there is a superhero in Lagos, I will tell him to do so many things, because Nigeria now, we are suffering. See the way our people living, see where we are living. Or assume I am the one, I will do more than they were doing in Nigeria, so that they will know I'm an African hero.
Martin thinks the Lagos heroes should be there for everybody.
You know, we see our African comics, we see our characters as a bridge between Africa and the world in general. We can all be heroes. And you don't have to have superpowers to do good. That's what our comics say.
And that report was written by Johannes Meyer. We leave the world of superheroes but stay in Nigeria, where there were emotional scenes of joy and jubilation over the weekend when a group of parents were reunited with 21 schoolgirls who were kidnapped by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Now, ahead of a planned meeting between the girls and President Muhammadu Buhari, it was reported that Boko Haram was prepared to release a further 83 girls out of the more than 200 who were seized in April 2014. Charlotte Chelsom Peel presents this report now by Dorothy Gruner.
They've waited nearly 1,000 days for this. Now, finally, they can hug their loved ones. Boko Haram released 21 of the students known as the Chibok Girls last week. These reunions took place on Sunday at a religious ceremony in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. We're really thankful. We never imagined we would see this day. But with the help of God, we have come out of bondage. But others are not so lucky. Around 200 Chibok girls are still being held captive. I never expected to see my daughter again, and I pray for those girls still left behind, that God will bring them back safely, the same way our own daughter came back to us. The school in Chibok, in the northeast of Nigeria, where Boko Haram kidnapped 276 girls 2.5 years ago. They became an international symbol of the brutality of the Islamist militia. Dozens managed to escape. Boko Haram propaganda videos are the only proof that the others are still alive. Some of the girls have had babies in captivity. One said she didn't get any food for 40 days. They are haggard and traumatized. but at least these 21 girls are free. Their release was brokered by the Red Cross and the Swiss government. One faction of Boko Haram claims it's prepared to release a further 83 girls. That news gives some hope to the other families who've been waiting so long for their daughters.
That report was written by Dorothy Gruner.
Making a difference.
In many African countries, people living with disabilities still have to battle with prejudice and cope with numerous challenges. In Mozambique, Vaz de Souza is known as the good man for Maputo. For many years now, the businessman has been helping people living with disabilities to enter the job market. This report by Christiane Vieira is read now by Jane Ayeko Kumet.
At his restaurant, entrepreneur Vaz de Souza encourages people with disabilities to work hard in order to have a promising future. He employs five of them full-time and two more part-time. This is not just about aid, it's also about making use of opportunities, and de Souza provides this opportunity.
I hope they make it worthwhile. Many of them fall by the wayside, but a few of them took advantage of my hard work for them to go further. They end up with a degree. This means two or three fewer people struggling for survival.
For 3 years, Aderato Rabeka has been a waiter at de Souza's restaurant and has been saving for his studies. Rabeka has one arm. He dreams of going to university and is determined to prove that his physical condition is not an obstacle.
Of course, I have to demonstrate my potential. It is not enough to want or to dream about something. I have to show it with my work. And it is only a question of opportunity to show that we are capable.
Every Sunday, Vaz de Souza goes to the sports hall in downtown Maputo. There he joins 17 soccer players with different kinds of visual impairments. They are a team united in the fight against blindness and have been together for 6 years now. The footballs are filled with pebbles, which make a sound to guide the players. This makes it easier to follow the ball.
I believe that in the same way I'm in this fight, others can join it. I started alone and now I have 10 associates. Tomorrow we can be 20. And in some 2 or 3 years, we may change the mentality within society concerning people living with disabilities.
Around 50 people with disabilities got their first job with Vaz de Souza. The Mozambican entrepreneur believes goodwill is the way to overcome social exclusion.
And that report was written by Christiane Vieira.
Tune in to DW's New Africa Link live at 16 UTC, Monday to Friday, starting on October 31st. News, views, sports, and what's trending on social media.
And before we leave you, a quick reminder now of our main stories. Opposition parties in South Africa have filed criminal complaints against the three Gupta brothers and President Jacob Zuma's son, Dudu Zane. And South Sudan's rebel leader Riek Machar has told this program that the international community failed to offer sufficient help for the implementation of the peace process. That's all we had time for. If you'd like to comment to any of these stories, why not send us a text message? Then the number is +491609575951. I repeat it again, +491609575951. An email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or you can also send us a letter to Africa Link, Deutsche Welle, 53110 Bonn, Germany. As always, thank you for listening. This is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. Until tomorrow, bye now.